Hello, World Wide Web. This is Zach, and you're listening to Explains on the Bitcoin Well podcast.
You see this story making the rounds yesterday? Some firm in New York is petitioning the courts to grant them ownership of 39,000 supposedly abandoned Bitcoin wallets.
Yeah, I don't know about that. They're asking a judge to declare your coins forfeit if you've gone quiet long enough, and then hand them over.
Not literally hand them the keys, that's kind of the point. Like, how will that even work? It doesn't matter what the judge rules. They can't move the coins without the private keys, and they can't get the private keys if they don't even know who owns the Bitcoin in the first place.
Seems like it's just a publicity stunt, honestly. 12 years I've been into Bitcoin, and it never ceases to amaze me how people can completely misunderstand how it works and think that the court could order someone to move Bitcoin like that. It's absolutely ridiculous. Meanwhile, Bitcoin dipped to a six-week low this morning on the Hormuz airstrike news, or, you know, whatever news you want to blame the move on, but 900 million in longs liquidated overnight. And to me, that's what Bitcoin loves to do. It loves to wreck people on both the down and the upside trade before it decides to rip in one direction or the other. But hey, that's just Thursday in Bitcoin. If you're not bullish right now with all of the macro news going on, then you're not paying attention. The daily price action has got to be the least interesting thing about Bitcoin.
But all of that, the New York court order, the price drop, the macro chaos, it all routes back to the same single question. Are you holding your own Bitcoin keys?
And that's exactly what today's episode is about. This is part four of our Bitcoin wallet series. Last time we covered the theory, but this time we're getting into the nitty-gritty. What hardware wallet should you use, and how do you actually send and receive a Bitcoin transaction? We also go over some of the most important rules to keep in mind when holding your own Bitcoin. So let's step out of the chaos of the news cycle and the price action and relax into some knowledge and understanding. If you've got questions or pushback or a story to share, email me at z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com. I read and respond to every single email. And this is a good one to share with friends and family that have been meaning to get off the exchange, but they're scared, don't know how. The only way to get there is the three S's: study, stack, and secure. All right, everyone, enjoy the show. In the last video, we covered the theory behind hardware wallets. We explain the magic trick of air gap signing, how the devices keep your private keys locked in an offline vault while still letting you transact over the internet. But theory only gets you so far. Look, if you're a beginner, the thought of actually buying one of these devices, moving your Bitcoin off an exchange, and sending your first transaction, it probably gives you an anxiety attack. The first few times that I sent Bitcoin, it scared the crap out of me. And I just didn't think it was gonna work. You're afraid of clicking the wrong button, sending to the wrong address, watching your savings disappear into the digital void with no customer service number to call. Well, that fear is completely normal. And it's also the main thing standing between you and genuine financial sovereignty. Today, we're taking the training wheels off. This is a practical step-by-step deep dive into actually using a hardware wallet. We'll look into the best devices on the market in 2026 and how to set them up without getting scammed. And we'll walk through exactly how to send and receive your first Bitcoin transaction, including the few moments that will eventually make you panic and why you don't need to. Let's get into it. First off, there are dozens of hardware wallets on the market. When I first got into Bitcoin, it was easy because there was only like one or two hardware wallets, but they all sucked. So let's cut through the noise of all the choices and focus on four that fit different types of users. For the beginner, there's Block's BitKey, backed by Jack Dorsey's company Block. This is designed for simplicity above everything else. It costs around $130 to $150 and integrates with a clean mobile app. It removes a lot of the technical friction that scares newcomers off. Think of it as the Apple-like experience of cold storage. If you're looking for a smooth, easy experience where you don't have to worry about backing up your seed phrase or how you're going to handle inheritance planning, then this is a perfect wallet for you. P.S. I gave my mom one and now she holds Bitcoin in cold storage. It's amazing. Now, for the more budget conscious among you, there's Blockstream Jade. At around $50 to $70, this is the best entry-level option. Open source firmware, a built-in camera so you can operate it entirely air-gapped via QR codes, and a lot of capability for the price. If you want to get started without spending too much, this is a device for you. For the premium user, there's Foundation Passport. At around $260, this is a serious piece of hardware. It looks like an old Nokia phone, but it uses a high-quality camera for QR codes with no USB connection required, and the industrial design is genuine. Beautiful. If you want something that feels as serious as what it's protecting, this is a great place to start. Now, for the security maximalists, also known as the super nerds of the audience, there's the Cold Card Mark IV. At around $160, this is the cypherpunk's choice. Bitcoin only, no altcoins. It looks like a retro calculator, and it uses micro SD cards to transfer data, which means it literally never has to plug into a computer. So if the thought of any USB connection makes you nervous, the Cold Card was built for you. And I'm still sporting an old Mark III, and it's my favorite hardware wallet by far. Now, they all do the same core job, which is generate your keys, keep them offline, and sign transactions securely. Pick the one that fits your budget and comfort level. The best hardware wallet is the one you'll actually use correctly. And also, don't feel trapped. You can try out different devices, and your wallet can even migrate from one to the other using your seed phrase as a backup. So just know you always have options and you're not ever completely locked in to one ecosphere, like you are with Apple products, for instance. Now, setting up your hardware wallet is a sacred process. If you get this wrong, nothing else matters. So follow these rules without exception. Rule one, buy direct. Only purchase from the manufacturer's official website. Not Amazon, not eBay, not a third-party reseller, especially if it says it's used. I mean, come on. Supply chain tampering is a real threat. People receive devices all the time where middlemen preloaded malware or pre-generated the seed phrase before it arrived. Buy direct every time. Rule two. Check for tampering. When the box arrives, inspect the holographic seals or whatever security it has on the box before you do anything else. And if it looks broken or disturbed, stop immediately and contact the manufacturer. Do not power on the device. And make sure you get a refund or a new device. Rule number three. No pre-generated seed phrases, ever. When you first power the device on, it has to generate your new seed phrase right there on its own screen in front of your eyes. If you open the box and find a card inside that says, "Here's your seed phrase," throw that thing away, man. It's a scam. They just want you to load up their pre-existing wallet and put your own Bitcoin on it. A legitimate hardware wallet never ships with a pre-made seed phrase, ever. Rule number four. The fire drill. Before you move any serious amount of Bitcoin onto the device, do a practice run. Generate a seed phrase, send $5 of Bitcoin onto the wallet, and then intentionally wipe it back to factory settings. Pull out your paper backup, which you should have made, and restore the wallet using your written words. If the $5 comes back when you restore the wallet, you know you did it correctly. You know with complete certainty that your backup works. This drill will save you from a genuine crisis later. Do not skip it. Rule number five, know what legitimate support looks like.
We just need your 24-word seed phrase to process the upgrade.
But isn't that private?
Not for the premium service, sir. Please input it here.
No wallet manufacturer, no exchange, and no support team will ever ask for your seed phrase. Not through email, not through a chat window, and not through a website asking you to verify or recover your wallet. If anyone ever asks for your seed words for any reason whatsoever, you are being scammed. Close the window, delete the email, and move on. Once your hardware wallet is set up and your seed phrase is secure, there's one more step before you're operational: connecting it to software. Because your hardware wallet needs a window to look through. That window is your interface software. Most manufacturers have their own native apps, like the BitKey app or the Treasure Suite. If you want more advanced features and control, independent open source options like Sparrow Wallet or Electrum or Spectre are excellent choices. We'll get more into this later in the series when we cover like running your own nodes and how to connect it to your software. But here's the part most beginners don't expect. Once you pair your hardware wallet with your chosen software, the device shares something called your master public key with that software. And this is where things get cool. Your master public key is not your private key. It can't spend your Bitcoin, but it can do something very useful. It allows the software to generate all of your receiving addresses, display your full balance, and even build unsigned transactions, all without your hardware wallet even being plugged in. Think about what that means in practice. You can check your balance anytime from your laptop or smartphone. You can generate a fresh receiving address to share with someone, and you can even set up a transaction, enter the amount and destination, and get everything ready to send. None of that requires your hardware wallet to be present. The software handles all of that using only the master public key. The hardware wallet only enters the picture at the very last moment when it's time to sign. That's the step that requires your private key, and that's the step that only the device in your hand can perform. Everything else happens in the software, safely and without risk. This separation is one of the most elegant parts of how the system works. Your private key never moves. Your public key does the daily heavy lifting, and the two only meet when you physically pick up your device and choose to authorize a transaction. All right, so you're set up and your software is connected. Let's do the thing that makes most beginners sweat, the first transaction. Now start small, $5 to $20 is plenty. And a quick note before we dive in, for a more thorough step-by-step you can refer back to anytime, check out the webinar we released a few weeks back. It covers setting up your wallet, receiving and sending your first transaction, and walking you through the full backup restoration process. I'll cover the key steps here, but that video goes a little bit deeper if you want to check it out. So first, to receive Bitcoin, you need to open your interface software and click Receive. I know, crazy. This is the equivalent of getting your email address ready to send to someone so they know where to send the email to. The software will generate a Bitcoin address, which is just a long string of letters and numbers, along with a QR code. Remember, because the software already has the public key, it can generate this address without your hardware wallet being plugged in. When copying and pasting that address, always stop before you do anything else and run the 6 and 6 rule. What I mean by that is hackers can use clipboard malware that silently replaces whatever address you copied with their own the moment you hit paste. You'd never catch it by scanning the full string because it's just too many numbers and letters to keep track of. But if you check the first 6 characters and the last 6 characters against the original, any substitution immediately becomes obvious. Make this a habit every single time, no exceptions. And if anything doesn't match up, you know that something has gone wrong. In my entire history of Bitcoin, I've never had this actually happen, but just get into the habit so that it never is a problem for you, especially if you're sending a significant amount of Bitcoin. Once you've confirmed the address, share it with the sender or paste it into your exchange withdrawal page. On BitcoinWell.com, you can save this address to your account so that when you buy Bitcoin, it automatically goes straight to your wallet. Because we don't hold the Bitcoin on our exchange at all, we send it straight to your wallet. Now, your hardware wallet doesn't need to be plugged in to receive funds. The network sends directly to your address and the software tracks it automatically. You're going to wait somewhere between 10 minutes and an hour for confirmations, although the Bitcoin will show up immediately in your wallet. And then the Bitcoin after the confirmations is permanently yours. Now, sending Bitcoin. This is the moment of truth. Open your app and click, wait for it, send. Paste in the address of the person you're trying to pay or the exchange you're sending to sell. Reminder again to run the 6 and 6 rule to check the address, verifying that everything matches up. Enter the amount you want to send, then choose your fee. Wallets will typically offer options ranging from high priority to low, with fees anywhere from a few cents to several dollars, depending on network congestion and how fast you want to send it. Time-sensitive transaction? Pay a higher fee. Not in a rush? Pick low and save money. I almost always choose the lowest fee. I mean, I don't want to spend my Bitcoin, and I'm almost never in that much of a hurry. And to be honest, it's usually confirmed within 10 minutes regardless, unless the network is crazy backed up. Just a note here that every hardware wallet is different. Some will require you to plug them in, some will want you to scan a QR code, and some will allow you to save the unsigned transaction to an SD card and physically put it into your device that way. At the end of the day, they're all doing the same thing, which is getting a copy of the unsigned transaction from your computer or phone and signing that transaction and then sending it back to the computer. So when I talk about plugging in your hardware wallet, just know that your device might work differently and you should follow the instructions of your device, but the fundamental process is going to be the same regardless. So with that said, plug in your hardware wallet and follow the specific steps of your device to allow your hardware wallet to access the unsigned transaction. The device's own screen will display the destination address and the amount. Run the 6 and 6 check one more time on the physical screen because this is your last line of defense before anything is final. Enter your PIN, press the physical confirm button, and the software broadcasts your transactions to the network. Although some will require another step of moving the transaction back to your computer, then you can hit send from your computer. You'll receive a transaction ID, which is your permanent receipt on the blockchain. You just settled a final, irreversible transaction globally without a bank involved anywhere in the process. You are now a central bank. Take that, Fed. Now, two things will eventually happen that will make your stomach drop. Here's what they are and what to actually do. The first is, my transaction is stuck. You just sent Bitcoin, and 6 hours later, it still says unconfirmed. You didn't lose your money. What happened is that you set your fee too low during a period of congestion in the network. Your transaction is sitting in the mempool, waiting for miners to pick it up. It's not lost. The solution is just wait. Transactions with low fees will either eventually confirm as network congestion clears, or they'll just be dropped and the Bitcoin will return to your wallet. Although technically the Bitcoin never left your wallet if the transaction didn't confirm, but you know what I mean. If you need it to go through faster, most modern wallets support a feature called RBF, replace by fee, which lets you rebroadcast the transaction with a higher fee to push it to the front of the line. Now, the other thing that might happen is you might send it to the wrong address. If you genuinely copy-pasted an incorrect address and the transaction confirmed, I have to be honest with you, there's no recovery. Bitcoin transactions are irreversible by design. The funds are gone. This is exactly why the 6 and 6 rule is not optional. It's the one habit that stands between you and an unrecoverable mistake. Build it in from your very first transaction and never let it slip.
What are you doing?
Getting comfortable with self-custody.
Getting comfortable with self-custody is one of the most important things you can do for your financial future. The first transaction is the hardest. After that, the process becomes second nature, and the anxiety is replaced by something much better. The quiet confidence of knowing that your wealth is genuinely yours. And there's no better feeling than realizing that, oh, this Bitcoin thing, it actually works. Modern hardware wallets also offer advanced features worth knowing about as you grow. Duress pins that open decoy wallets if you ever are physically coerced. Hidden passphrases that act as a 25th seed word for an additional layer of protection. These are tools you can explore once the basics feel solid. But before we go any further in the series, we need to talk about something that trips up more people than almost anything. You now understand self-custody. You understand why holding your own keys is the whole point. And yet the majority of people who own Bitcoin today are still holding it on an exchange. Some of them know better and still haven't made the move yet. most of them genuinely don't understand what they're risking. In the next video, we're going deep on exchanges, what they actually are, how they actually work, what happens to your Bitcoin when one fails, and why the collapses of Mt. Gox, FTX, and Celsius weren't freak accidents. They were predictable consequences of a fundamentally flawed model. If you have anyone in your life who's still keeping their Bitcoin on an exchange, including you, you might want to send them that video when it drops. It might be the most important thing they watch all year, especially if it keeps their Bitcoin safe. All right, I'll see you there.